And we've got Whitley Strieber with you this hour. We'll take your phone calls. We'll chat a little bit more with him about these alien implants, and we've got to get into his California sighting as well. All that is next on Coast to Coast AM. Whitley, you said something interesting before the break, that aliens could look human-like. So in your case, with the implants, how do you know they weren't aliens that just looked human?
I don't.
No.
I don't. I was once told by someone who I believe legitimately was involved in this from the government side. I'm not going to say his name. Both for that reason and also because I could be wrong. But I'm fairly sure I was right. I'm right. And he said that one of their great fears was that there could be people with agendas that have nothing whatsoever to do with us who could be here involved in our lives. And who knows where they might end up in our society or what their motives might be.
Absolutely. Tell us about this California sighting you had.
Well, I have not had in my life many UFO sightings. I've had a few. I had one with my brother back 25 years ago. My wife and I have had two. And I've had a couple, mm-hmm. two or three. In this particular case, this happened last Thursday night, and started with, as I was getting ready to go to bed, I kept having the feeling of a presence. You know, I felt almost as if there was someone else in the apartment. It was a feeling I'm familiar with because I used to get it all the time when we had our cabin back in upstate New York.
Okay.
So I'm there with this feeling and thinking, oh, it can't be true in a apartment in California. So I'm lying down, the light's out, turn out the light. And as I'm lying down, there are vertical blinds in our bedroom that look out over a roof line and then into the sky. And at this point, it's cloudy and some movement. The windows are about a third open. You know, they're not totally closed. They're not flat. And so I can see the sky sort of through them.
Mm-hmm.
Something catches my eye. And, yeah, it's not, nothing should be out there. And I turn my head and I'm looking. And I realize I'm not seeing the clouds. I'm seeing an enormous shape. I mean, big, big, George.
Triangular shaped?
No, it was just so big that I just saw the side.
Just
of it.
Huge, yeah.
It has a big white kind of Y lying at a 45-degree angle on it, and it's moving fairly rapidly westward, which is out of my field of vision. And it's totally silent. The windows are open. It couldn't have been more than a block away, and maybe even just a few hundred feet in the sky. It was not far away. There was absolutely no engine noise or anything like that. I yell, Anne, and I jump up out of bed, grab my phone, and rush to the window to take a picture of it. She jumps out of bed, and by that time, it has gotten up into the clouds. I could see that it was moving upward, and I was flabbergasted. I absolutely flabbergasted. I haven't seen anything like that ever. Not that like that. The last thing I saw was in 2007 out of that same window, going in the same direction, but it was all lighted. It was not as big, but it was all lighted up. But I don't see these things that often. So I immediately put some information up on it on my website, on Unknown Country. And if people want to read details, they can go to Whitley's Journal on Unknown Country. And I wrote it all up there. So it's all there. But it was quite phenomenal. And there's no question in my mind, this was not a blimp or anything like that. It that close, we hear those things around here all the time. It would have been making, you would have heard the engine noise.
Sure. And you've been covering, as we have and Linda has, this strange series of hums and sounds. We've talked about this before.
Yes, we have.
They continue, Whitley.
They do. And most recently, there was a very dramatic series of explosions in South America, I believe in Argentina.
Yeah.
And then there were there bombs more sporadic than they were, say, 2 months ago in the United States. And some of them we've determined to be hoaxes, but the great majority of them are not hoaxes. The great majority of them are really very strange sounds. And frankly, I find them quite disturbing. I make no secret about it. I find it disturbing because it's something that should not be happening. And there's no really clear explanation for it. There was a little town in Wisconsin where this was happening. And then south of that town, in another little community, all the tiles on the floor of the basement of an elementary school flew up off the floor in the middle of the day when the children are down there having lunch. And it's absolutely ridiculous to say they claimed that it was a 1.5 earthquake that caused it. You know, I mean, how many 1.5 earthquakes have you been through in the past week? Probably 5 or 6.
So small you don't even notice it.
They're unnoticeable. It was absolutely ridiculous that all of the explosions taking place in that town and what happened under the other community's school were caused by any kind of earthquake at all. And it wasn't fracking, because the only fracking being done in the area is 200 miles away. And that's just one of hundreds of stories. And what worries me is this. I hope we don't find out very suddenly and the hard way what this is all about. One of the people at the Dreamland Festival is a very interesting lady called Raven Dana, who was at our cabin years ago and had a face-to-face encounter, as a number of people did, at the cabin with one of the little grave people, creature beings. And she said it smelled like the forest floor, which, if you've ever been in the forest and dig down a little bit in the eastern forest where its soil is damper, it's pungent. Yeah. And this little creature smelled like it had come up out of the ground. And we used to hear drilling noises under our house all the time. A musty smell. And I'm just thinking that so many of these sounds seem to be coming from underground. And what if one of these days they just suddenly come up?
I love it.
Not from below, not from above, but from below.
Let's take some calls here, Whitley. They're lining up for you. We'll go to Linda, High Point, North Carolina, on East of the Rocky Line. Hi, Linda.
Hi, George. Thank you so much for taking my phone
call.
It's a dream of mine to be able to speak to Whitney. I have an implant. Well, several of them. I got the first one in 1976. I've got one in my left ear, and I get this high-pitched hum, like a electronic sound in my left ear. And I had one in my right nostril. I blew out of my nostril this little thing that looked kind of like a car battery that goes in for the lights, you know, that's covered in the glass, a little cylinder shape, but it was smaller, and it came out of my right nostril. And I tried to save it, and I told somebody about it, and it disappeared. And then I woke up with another nosebleed. I guess they replaced it. And I've got one in my toe. These have not all happened at the same time. This was over a period of years from 1976.
Now, this is pretty typical that it would happen a number of times. You're not alone in that respect. Now, here's what immediately comes to my mind. Why can't we say to you, well, the Centers for Disease Control or the federal government has got a program, or there is a private program funded by a foundation, and they will do a physical workup on you prior to removal of these objects. They will remove the objects, study them at a high level of scientific competence, do other physical workups and follow-ups with you afterwards, and keep in touch with you and listen to your story and put it into a database where it can be correlated with other stories. Now, why doesn't that happen? what is wrong with us that we don't take notice of the possibility that you have in your body right now physical evidence that could advance knowledge so dramatically. And instead, we have an entire group of communities, government, science, intellectuals, media, who would laugh at you to the point that if you were to say your name publicly and to identify yourself, you could even just be laughed right out of a job.
That's true.
That's all we have to offer you, and I'm ashamed.
Vincent in Los Angeles, Skype line. Hi, Vincent. Go ahead.
Yes, how you doing? Mr. Strieber and Mr. Norrie.
Hi.
Yesterday I left on Skype a nice lengthy little message, but your engineer back there said just send it directly to your email. Now, it's regarding this coming Saturday. This is the third time, but I went to the second time out here in Los Angeles at the Park Plaza.
Okay.
There's a gentleman named Robert Bingham. He summons... basically, I'm saying he summons these orbs. I don't see them to be craft. He calls them angels. Now,
he might be right.
Correct. Now, from what I've been observing on YouTube, and there is an exclusive on I guess UFOs, demons, and et cetera, that when the astronauts went to the moon, that they were observed by these orbs, as well as ships, as separate entities and separate beings observing them. Now, what I'm saying is I went to that particular one session on the 29th of April, and it took about a good half hour. And lo and behold, back and forth, off and on, these ships would appear approximately about 3 to 4 miles up in our atmosphere.
Ships or orbs?
Orbs.
Orbs.
Now, ships would be obviously something physical. All we recognized was something more of a soft, subtle, cloudy orb, or it would sometimes they would appear direct like little sparkles of reflective light.
Well, let me ask you, Whitley. I have heard a number of people have referred to orbs as being from ghostly apparitions as opposed to extraterrestrial. Have you heard that?
Well, all I can do, I always speak when I can from experience. I've had exactly one experience of this in my life, and I'll tell you precisely what it was. I was at a friend's house, and there was this guy that took a lot of orb photographs, actually. And I always assumed they were dust on the camera lens, et cetera.
Insects, so many people think
that. You can always count on me to do that. I mean, it's probably not unhealthy that I do that. Anyway, I was out in his backyard. They were having a barbecue, and I suddenly was aware of the presence of my mother, who was dead at that time, so strongly that I just stopped in my tracks. And it was like she was in the air about 40 or 50 feet above me and sort of right in front of me. And I was just communing with her. It was like she was there, like she was alive. And because of the look on my face, it was night, but somebody took a picture of me. And this was not with a digital camera. This was an old-fashioned camera, because in those days, there was sort of a mix of digital and film cameras. And they didn't know why I was looking like that. They just took the picture because I was. And when the picture was developed, there in it, you can see my face has this expression of concentration and happiness on it. And there in it, about 40 or 50 feet up in the dark, is this little orb. And I didn't see it. The camera person didn't see it. We weren't looking for it. They didn't know what I was doing. But I've thought since then that these may be manifestations of souls.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that, too.
It was a wonderful experience.
All right, next up, we go to Kelly in Yuma, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hi, Kelly. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a story for Whitney. Your opinion of a 6 or 7-year-old asking her mother if people ever come here and made not to remember. And I knew as soon as I asked her that she wouldn't understand, because in my mind, when I said here from another place, I meant another world.
Were you the six-year-old?
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't understand where that question came from, because at the time I had never seen anything or heard anything about the subject.
Well, that you know of. What do you think, Whitley?
I think this happens a lot to children. I think that children are very much involved. I know I was as a child. And why wouldn't they be? Of course they are. So my guess is that whatever this is, in the end, right now, you are telling us a story of something related to it that happened to you when you were a child. That would be my response. That's what I would think.
How do most parents react to a little kid, Whitley, who tell them these things?
I get letters all the time, and they're the hardest ones to answer. And what I have consulted with psychologists about this, and I am not a psychologist. I have no professional training. But I always say to them that they should not engage their child in other words, don't tell the child that you think you might have been had an encounter with aliens or anything like that.
Don't scare them.
If the child has more than a normal amount of trouble sleeping, then go to a counselor or someone who is skilled in helping children to deal with things that disturb them. That's all I can say. And once again, I have to say this is an area of this where the fact that this society has fallen down so badly in dealing with this really, really, I find extremely disturbing.
Well, you know, and since we've lost the John Macks of life and the Bud Hopkins, you know, we've really lost this ability to get people in front of them.
Oh, it's worse than it was. I mean, you know, when John Mack was around, this was a man with real academic authority.
Yep.
Now that he's gone, there's nobody.
There's nobody out there.
Nobody out there.
Whatever happened to our buddy John Carpenter from Missouri, who used to do this? Did you know John Whitley?
I knew him vaguely, and I haven't heard from him in years.
He used to be on my local show all the time, and then he just decided he was a social worker, and he decided he wasn't going to do this anymore. I'm told he's starting to dabble with it again. He, too, was very good at this.
Well, and there was Constance Clear in Texas, who was a psychologist who had a group, and we have here in California a wonderful lady called Yvonne Smith.
Yes, she sure is.
She's a lovely, lovely lady, and she has a group that she's had for years, but they're just few and far between.
Yep, not that many at all. Whitley's website, unknowncountry.com. Make it one of your favorites. It's a great website that he and his wife, Ann, put out great information. I go to it every day, as a matter of fact. I'm going to be back in a moment. We'll take final phone calls with Whitley Strieber right here on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Mona Wynn joins us as we talk about the Akashic Records. That should be fascinating. When we come back with Whitley Strieber, let's take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. I think, Whitley, also some of the greatest UFO reports that come in from pilots or astronauts. I keep thinking of the Gordon Cooper episodes and people like that. I mean, how credible can you get?
Well, how credible can you get? I had a couple of long conversations with Gordon Cooper, Roy. Fascinating, wonderful man, and a very straight-up, plain-spoken individual, and he was telling it like he saw it, and not lying or dissembling in any way. The incident where he saw the object on the ground in Edwards Air Force Base, and sent the pictures on to Washington where they disappeared.
They kept them. Yep.
Kept them. Though that happened. It happened.
And didn't they tell him, don't even look at the negatives?
Don't even look at this. That's right. Don't even look. And he did what he was told. I mean, later years, he was like Colonel Marcel, Colonel Jesse Marcel, or Art Exon, for that matter. Colonel Marcel, as he got older, just didn't feel like he wanted to keep that secret anymore.
That's right. Do you think that these, and we're assuming that they exist, that they're coming from planetary systems, Whitley, as opposed to dimensions, as many people think?
That's a good question, and the reason it is that the distances in space are so fantastic. You know, we think, light speed, that's pretty fast. It's not fast.
It's not fast, not in space.
But here's the thing. Just recently, there has been some breakthrough physics in the area of understanding what wormholes are. And previously, we thought they were almost a theoretical idea. Now it turns out that they're not that difficult to construct. Not only that, if parallel universes exist, it would be easier to construct wormholes between our universe and a parallel universe. And that could explain why so many of these creatures are so darn weird. They might not even be from this reality.
That's true. That is true. Or they could be bending space and time somehow.
Well, that's what a wormhole does, is it essentially bends space and time. But, you know, the thing that's so amazing is that even if there are in the universe just maybe one or two intelligent species in every galaxy containing billions of stars, and now we know billions more planets, just one or two, that means that there are hundreds of billions of them in the universe, because the darn thing is so big. Somebody out there is going to figure it all out. Believe you me, statistically, it's inevitable. And if you look at what's happening here, the answer is, of course they have. Of course they're here. It's without question. The questioning of that is a way of avoiding having to really study it. That's what those questions are about. The questioning, the whole questioning at that level is fake. It's social manipulation done by professionals. The reality is we're way past those basic questions. They are here. They've been here for a long time. Questions, real ones, who are they? Where are they from? Why are they here? Those are real questions. We won't look at those, though.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Lucy in Ontario, Canada. Hi, Lucy.
Hello there.
Hey.
I don't think Whitley could have come on this program in any better timing than tonight. He is so much needed after last night's guest claiming that the Greys were evil and they had never done anything any good. I recommend the public read Whitley's books from beginning. I think Communion was the first one. Such a humble worldview. Anybody can tell from hearing him, plus reading his book. He's a student of the truth, so committed to the truth, so humble, and very, very informative. Now, I just got to say that, just like you said, Whitley, in one of your books, how can you classify a whole group of people as being bad? When you look at humans, there's bad and good between each one of us.
Yeah.
So, it's just...
Boy, I mean, if we got to another planet, what a riot that would be. I mean, Muslims, Catholics, Presbyterians, Hindus...
And mild people, fiery people.
I mean, Lord, we'd have them coming and going. They'd be wondering, what in the world, how many species are involved in this? Hundreds?
Listen, I've got a question, though. Do you think Canada is not visited as much as the States? I don't know anybody who's in contact with UFOs around Toronto.
Oh, no.
North Toronto.
I will tell you right now, one of the most extraordinary abduction cases in history is the Corina Sables case, and she's public with it, in Canada. I studied it extensively. I know Corina very, very well. She had an encounter on a roadside in British Columbia with a friend, and it happened in the context of a period of time there where there was a UFO flap going on. Some of the best UFO video ever made came out of that UFO flap. It wasn't made by Corina, but No question. That was an extraordinary case. And the reason that you don't hear as much from Canada is very simple. It has a much smaller population. There are fewer people in a bigger area. So there's not as many people are going to notice things.
No, not at all.
But you believe me, it's happening up there all right.
Let's go to Tim, Union, South Carolina. He's with us. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure thing, Tim.
I was in the Navy and the military and went through an experience called a cyclone. And it involved the USS Aldrich and Project Manhattan. And but my question essentially is could this be some sort of time travel where people in the future are coming back and either guiding themselves or correcting mistakes that they've made or whatever, and these things that we're seeing are some kind of residual effect from the effect we're having on like the electromagnetic spectrum or something?
You know, it's a good question. Science is divided as to whether or not movement through time is even possible or looking through time. We don't know the answer to that question, but it's a good question. It's one of the questions that probably is answerable if the right people with the right knowledge and the right equipment would address this, they'd probably be able to eventually say yes or no to that question.
Yeah, and see, I don't know, you know, myself, and I was there, and there was this was blocked out of my memory, basically wiped out after the thing, and it was a long term mission that I was put on called the 30-year plan, and it really staggers my mind, but I went through a recall December the 15th of 2010, which unblocked me and brought back all these memories that are just, they're really kind of staggering. And, I had...
Well, what sort of memories? Give us a hint. Don't just let us...
Well, it went on all night. It was a Navy-sponsored thing that was called a cyclone. And there were drugs involved. I think what they were to take me to a point of consciousness to where going through this wouldn't blow my mind, but it would just leave me enough consciousness to remember these things. And I was sent back to 1943 to the USS Aldrich and the Manhattan Project. And I was essentially there in real time, even though it was 82 when I went through this, or late 81. And they call this the Ship of Souls, and it was, you know, about blew my mind. But basically, the ship was a naval experiment in time travel, and they did this. They succeeded, and the men that were on the ship were like melted into the deck where actually...
Oh, that's the Philadelphia experiment.
I'm sorry.
Sure sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. What did I say?
Manhattan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's something completely different.
Yes, it is. That's the Manhattan Project was the...
That was the bomb.
Yeah, that was...
I've heard this story many times and from different people, and I can't... I don't judge these things anymore. I've gone beyond that. I just listen, and I... All I can say is thank you for telling us this story, and I can't say that I know it's true or it's not true, or what. I also can't say that I could tell you that you have an accurate memory of what happened to you, because I just don't know, but it's absolutely fascinating, I will say that for sure.
It's Randy's turn now, Hollywood, California. Hi, Randy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for holding.
Yes, hi, Whitney.
Hi.
I had a dream a while back, and in this dream, this entity came into view. It wasn't a female, and it wasn't a male. It was an entity. And this entity revealed to me, I asked the entity, what are you doing? And he said, we are mysterious travelers. They don't have a home. They do travel enough from other dimensions, and they are very close, and they're trying to save us on this planet. They say the humans are very stupid, and they're just trying to, not to save us really in the term of saving, but they are trying to help us become more aware of ourselves. And this is what they're trying to do, but it's really hard for them. They say it's very difficult, and then it just vanished, and I woke up, and that was the end of the dream. And so I just, you know, wanted to reveal that to you. Maybe you had the same kind of experience.
And whatever happened to you, you have successfully broadcast the message that was given to you. So maybe they're actually having a little bit better time of doing this than they think, because you just told a couple million people the story. So, you know, they succeeded with you very well. So congratulations in that sense. You know, if parallel universes are physically real and they contain intelligent beings, all bets are kind of off, because it would mean that there, you know, we think there might be billions of planets in our universe that have intelligent life on them. But when you get into parallel universes and other dimensions, the numbers grow exponentially to the point where it becomes clear that statistically everything possible will be happening. Everything. Including what happened to you.
You know, Whitley, of all the UFO cases that you have heard about in your career, what do you think is the single best? Roswell, what would it be?
Well, I've sort of narrowed it down to three cases. The Milton Torres case that I talked about earlier.
That was a good one.
Is a good case.
I met him in D.C. at one of Steve Bassett's events.
Yeah, I've never met him. I've heard a lot of good things about him. He's a fine man, apparently. And the Paul Hill case that took place back in the early 50s, where the two Pan Am pilots observed a UFO very carefully. It was also tracked on radar. And then later, this prominent NASA engineer, Paul Hill, made similar observation from the ground. That's a really good case. But I think, on balance, my best case is September the 18th, 1976, 11 o'clock at night in Iran.
Great story.
Great, incredible story. You've probably interviewed Colonel...
Yes.
Jafari, now General Jafari, so have I. He's a great friend of Roger Lear's. That, to me, is the best UFO case there is. And there's such a fascinating corollary to it.
Another one where they were ordered to shoot.
They were ordered to shoot, and they could not shoot. The guns would not work. And, you know, the incredible thing, you know, there's a case, there's a Colonel Olin Mooey, who is still very much alive, Linda Moulton Howe has talked to, who commented to them when they reported that they had attempted to attack the object. He said, "You're lucky you couldn't fire." And he's never said anything more than that about it, but I've often wondered whether he was just speculating or whether he knew something for certain. And that has always kind of haunted me. But you know, George, there are cases from the distant past that are absolutely have been forgotten.
Yeah.
Like back in the 30s, you know, this was going on back in the 30s, big time. There were cases in Europe, like, for example, it was over Sussex that Milton Torres had his experience. In 1932, four Royal Air Force planes, biplanes, had a gigantic light shining down on them from above in that same area. Two of the planes failed and had to land. One of the pilots who was hit by the light got burned on his face and hands, like Betty and Cash and Vicky the Landons did in 1980. We don't know what happened to him. Another thing is a mysterious airplane was operating in northern Norway in Sweden in the early 30s. The Swedish Air Force could not find it. It was flying in at night in snow conditions, and conditions where planes absolutely were unable to fly at that time. They sent a young officer out. There was a reconnaissance mission that failed. They sent a young officer out on skis to look for it. He never came back. A rescue squad went out. They never came back. Remember the Bermuda Triangle? It happened before, but on skis. But we forget these things. There were phantom plane sightings in Sweden to the point where reporters were trying to go into the area where this was happening. The military wouldn't let them go into the area. There were mysterious radio signals being picked up. It was a sensational situation in Sweden and Finland and Norway by 1935. But, you know, when we have these things happen and there are no answers, we forget. And it slips out of our minds and out of our memory. And then a few years later, it comes back again. And it's as if it never happened before. And it goes on and on and on like that.
It sure does. Whitley, 30 seconds left. Quickly tell us how people can help Dr. Roger Lear.
Go to alienscalpel.com and get help him through the Lear Trust that's available there. I put $500 into the kitty myself.
Good for you.
And folks, you can put $5, $10, $20 into the kitty. That family needs to eat. That's a pioneer there, and he's in trouble.
Physically, I hope he's making the turn, huh?
He sounds a lot better.
Super. Whitley, thanks so much. Always a pleasure, my friend. Up next, we will talk about the Akashic Records. That's right, the history of the cosmos, next on Coast to Coast AM.